From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and I'm here every week on Tell the Truth Faster on KXAM, 1310 AM in Phoenix, Arizona, to deal with mental health issues from a holistic perspective, which means finding balance in body, mind, and spirit in our lives, within ourselves, how we exist in the world, our belief systems, and to me, as a human being and as a therapist, that sense of balance, that sense of integration of body, mind, and spirit is really how we become whole. Now, we all know that the truth will set you free. But the question we ask on this show is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? So, tonight's topic is one that all of us think about. It's one that all of us deal with in our lifetime, sometimes more often than others may. And it's often a topic most of us want to avoid at all costs and usually do. The title of today's show is Sacred Living, Sacred Dying. And it's the title of a book, which is a guide to embracing life and death. Sacred Living, Sacred Dying is a book written by a friend of mine who I'll be introducing shortly. Her name is Sharon Lund. And Sharon is somebody that I've known almost since my time in Los Angeles, 20 years, just about. And most of that time, especially from 1986 through the mid-90s, because of what was going on in L.A. and around the world with HIV and AIDS, I unexpectedly, but I can't say joyfully because it wasn't always a very joyous experience, but unexpectedly found myself dealing in my 30s with the issue of death and dying on a daily basis. Because of the work that I was doing in the gay community, in the community at large dealing with HIV and AIDS, and as a gay man who's HIV negative, having the skills as a therapist and my own natural human skills, I believe, I found myself at many bedsides. I found myself with clients and friends coming into my life who were dealing with issues that at the age that they were had never thought that they'd be dealing with death and dying issues. Now, I have a belief, and that is that you cannot fully live. You cannot live fully if you do not face your fears of death, if you're not willing to talk about death. Now, we live in a society where death, for the most part, except what we usually see in headlines and on television news reports, death is something that, in most families, it wasn't discussed. Even if a loved one died when we were growing up, if you think about it, how was that death handled? Our elders are usually put in nursing homes and die without family around them, instead of in their own beds, in their own homes, the way for eons and eons has always been the natural way of being. So children growing up, 100 years ago, or even less than that, would be around grandma and grandpa being sick and dying, and actually maybe even being the caretakers. And before there were antivirals and antibiotics and stuff, people did not always live to ripe old ages. They may have died from the flu and died from things today that we would never consider to be deadly. So death was something that was a part of society, part of living, but not today. Except for the fact that when we have an epidemic and a pandemic like HIV and AIDS, except when you may be facing toxic issues where whole communities may be ill, except when we're talking about wars and dying and the World Trade Center on 9/11, there are things where that has brought death into our society, our Western society, where we've had to face it. Now, some of us still hide our head in the sand, even now, in dealing with it. Well, hopefully tonight's show will help you get your head out of the sand, will help you listen and start dealing with your own issues around what death is about, what your fears are. Now, the beauty of Sharon Lund's book is it's actually a guide. It's actually a to-do list in preparing for one's death. It's not how to die book, but it's what you need in order to bring some peace into your life, that you know you have your house in order, that you know that you have demonstrated your caring for your loved ones by cleaning up all the clutter and making all the decisions and doing all that needs to be done in a very thoughtful and organized way. And in doing so, allows you to maybe do your own life review and clean up things that need to be cleaned up and maybe do some things you always wanted to do. But this was quite an amazing read. It's something that I read in just a couple of hours because the way she writes it is so clear and concise and organized, and yet with such heart and gentleness and humanity. And to me, that's the best way I can introduce Sharon to you, because Sharon is somebody who has heart and compassion and a tremendous amount of humanity. So Sharon, I would love to, I've been trying to get you on this show for years now, and I'm glad your book came out so we could finally say, okay, concrete, let's do it. So welcome to the show tonight, Sharon.
Stuart, thank you so much for having me on your show. And, you know, with all the praise that you're giving me, I want to give it back to you, because you've made a profound difference throughout humanity, not only in the United States, but in other countries too. So my blessings to you.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. So give my listeners a little bit more background. And even before you do, I want to remind those that are listening that this is a live show tonight. If you feel like calling in and talking about your own experiences or asking Sharon or myself some questions about tonight's topic, the number in Phoenix is 480-949-1310. That's 480-949-1310. And if you're listening via the internet outside the Phoenix area, it's the same number. Feel free to...
Thank you for listening to Independent 1310 KXAM, Mesa, Phoenix.
Are you suffering from anxiety?
Please, don't go out on me. Not now. Please.
Feeling let down?
I come home after a long day, and that's the reception I get.
You may be having an electronics breakdown. That's why Rent-A-Center makes getting the latest new brand name TVs, appliances, furniture, and home electronics and computers pain-free. All with easy payment options, no credit needed, delivery and service included. Rent-A-Center. We make it easy to make it your own.
Service included while you rent. In Arkansas, the advertisement is for a rental purchase transaction. No ownership option in Minnesota. Visit Rent-A-Center or rentacenter.com for details.
KXAM.
Wow. Well, I apologize for those technical difficulties. I know that my Comrex hotline keeps renegotiating. I don't know if it's in the station or, you know, on my end, but I apologize for the inconvenience and the technical problems this evening. Sharon, you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So where I was going before we got disconnected there was about your story, your backstory. I know that you're a woman who has had HIV and AIDS for quite some time, and I know that the way you found out about it was quite startling, but tell us a little bit about your own backstory.
Well, I was living in Los Angeles and active in the AIDS and cancer community in 1986, teaching body-mind healing techniques, actually at the LA Center for Living where Stuart was working. And at that time, it was only to gay men because it was gay men that were infected with AIDS. And it was a few months after I started working in the gay community and also the cancer community, I saw my ex-husband on a Dan Rather's AIDS special saying he was dying of AIDS. And I immediately called him, and he denied it. And then I heard from my spirit guides that I needed to be tested, and so I went in and got tested, and it came back positive. And Bill denied it that he was infected until right before he died, and then he admitted that he had lived a secret bisexual lifestyle, and when he was married to me in 1983, that he was infected. And the only reason I share that is there's a lot of women still that don't think that this can happen to them, and they think that the man that they're with the women that they're with are in a monogamous relationship. But I think the blessing came that I was already working in AIDS community, so I had all the support I needed from all these gay men, and they were so loving and so compassionate, and I learned so much from these men that it really gave me my life, and it really helped me in my healing process.
And in doing so, because I know I remember when I was director at the L.A. Center for Living, which was a drop-in center, a real wonderful, powerful place that Marianne Williamson actually had founded back in 86. And I know you had volunteered time to counsel and do workshops and things like that. You yourself were one of those lights that would come in and do that kind of work. How did it affect you initially to, first of all, like you said, at that point, most of the people most of us knew were gay men that were infected with HIV, and here you are a woman, certainly in a minority of minorities at that point. What did it do in terms of your own issues around living and dying, and what came up for you at that point?
Well, I thought it was really important to find support, but so I started working in a support group with men, and then I realized that I had to start a support group for women. And so I advertised it as a women's HIV support group, and no one came. And then I decided to change it to life-threatening illnesses. And then women came for all different reasons, but there were a handful of women that started coming out that were infected with AIDS. And then I also went to Louise Hay's Hayride group. I think it was really important for me, for my healing process, to speak my truth and to come out of denial. And I knew that as long as I stayed in denial or kept in secrecy, that my body and my mind and my spirit would be suffering because I'd be hiding little secrets and I couldn't be honest with my family members and other people how I was feeling or what emotions I was going through or even getting support. So I think the healing process of anything is about telling the truth, as you say, faster.
Right. You know, even if we look at your ex-husband as a prime example of that, people who have to live in fear and live in shame and live in closets, no matter what those closets are about, will always end up in a self-destructive pattern and bring other people down along the way with them.
Absolutely.
And, you know, about telling the truth faster, if your husband was able to deal with his own bisexuality, if he had been able to be honest with who he is, he may not have ever even married you, or at least you would have known up front the truth and made your own conscious decisions about being involved in this relationship. I mean, this is the core and essence of what Tell the Truth Faster is about, is the impact of secrets and shame and guilt and all those other things, and how it can really destroy an individual, a relationship, families, societies.
Secrets can kill you.
Your husband's a prime example. Yes, yeah. Of course. So here you are now, you know, back in the late 80s. You're a woman with HIV. You're starting these support groups. I think my listeners can get from a number of things you've said already that a lot of your life at that point was actually pretty entrenched in Eastern philosophy.
Absolutely.
So talk about that for a little bit, because the ultimate question, first of all, talk about what Eastern traditions and Eastern belief systems, how that impacted your life, but also the conflict between that and the Western medicine. Because I know for a lot of people, that became a real struggle for a lot of people who had certain belief systems and had to really make some hard decisions about whether or not to incorporate Western medicine in their own treatment. So talk about, first of all, your life founded in Eastern tradition.
Well, my Eastern philosophy actually came in 1984 in my first near-death experience, not my second one, but my first one, where I was introduced to a spirit guide on the, you know, spirit realm, and he was from the Eastern philosophy, and he taught me body-mind healing spirit techniques. But then I found a mentor in Los Angeles, and she taught me about the inner child. She taught me about the chakras. She taught me about the importance of nutrition and exercise and positive attitude and stress reduction and visualization and meditation. And so I started learning all these things and incorporating them into my life. And acupuncture was extremely important. In fact, to this day, I still do acupuncture every week or every other week. So to me, I embraced the Eastern philosophy because it meant that I had to take responsibility and that it was more me not covering up anything, but really looking at everything and dealing with it and addressing it instead of just taking a pill and not doing anything. And at one point in 1989, I was sick, and the doctor said if I didn't go on AZT that I would die within 6 months. And I went into meditation, and my spirit guides and God both said, do not take AZT. So in my mind, I thought, okay, I'm not going to take AZT. I'm going to die, so I'll get my affairs in order. And once again, I asked my parents if they'd take care of my daughter when I died. And about 2 weeks later, my meditation, what I heard was, why did you make your doctor God? He doesn't know how or when anybody's going to die. And that was an immediate wake-up call for me that's how true that was. And I fired that doctor and found a holistic doctor. And that's what got me traveling around the United States, is teaching alternative therapies. But in 97, when I came down with PCP and MAI, excuse me, I was in the hospital and I was forced to go on Western drugs, and for the first 2 days I refused it because it was against everything I even, you know, believed, or even because I had been teaching alternative therapies for so many years. But then what I got in meditation was, no, it's time to take the Western medication, bless everything that you take, see it increasing into your body and healing your body, but be conscious of everything you're taking. So now now I incorporate both the Western and Eastern philosophy, and I know that there's good in each of them, and everybody's body is different, so what works for one person may not work for another person, but to listen to the body and get in touch with the body, because your body always knows what it wants and what it needs,
mm-hmm.
And meditation is extremely important to me.
It's the same thing that I went through when, back in 1995, I think it was, when I finally identified my attention deficit disorder, and here I was leading the Hayride Louise Hayes group and mm-hmm. practicing a lot of the stuff you were talking about just now, and you know, none of it helped me with my focus issues and my ADD symptoms, even though I felt better having done all those other things. And I came to the same conclusion. It was interesting because I remember after struggling with it for maybe a day, you know, because at that point I said, you know what, if none of this other stuff's got me where I'm going, you know, then maybe I ought to try the medication. And I did the same thing. I held 5 milligrams of Ritalin in my hand, and I said a prayer, and I said, if this is meant to be, if this is meant to work, you know, God bless this. And, you know, my feeling is that, you know, nature, God helped create all the natural herbs and everything else that have been healing people for thousands of years. Well, God also created the minds of those people that helped develop the medications. And
that's,
I think,
right,
if anything is created in the right heart space and used and not abused, then it's healing and healthy. And I did the same thing, and I said that prayer, and I took my 5 milligrams, and 20 minutes later, it was like a transformation in my life.
Wow.
So, and I had people who I'd been teaching and who'd been coming to the Hayride and had been clients of mine who really had a lot of difficulty with me taking those medications.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because to me, to them, I was almost a traitor, you know,
right,
a hypocrite. And a few of them came to understand what I was talking about, and a few of them just disappeared from my life. So, anyway, so getting back to the book now, and I have to tell you, the timeliness of me getting these, you know, because I got 2 copies from you weeks ago. But the timeliness of this is amazing because last weekend I was in New York for a cousin's bat mitzvah and also to see my dad, and both of my brothers, you know, were there. And my dad will be 85 in May, and literally this weekend he looked on death's door.
Oh.
You know, 120 pounds and, you know, pneumonia in his lungs, and when he would cough, you could just see the energy draining with every cough that he just could not, you know, and you could see the embarrassment and the humiliation of a very proud man, you know, being skin and bones and not having the energy, and he turned to me at one point and he said, I never thought I'd get like this.
Oh,
you know, it was really, you know, I'm almost crying now just saying it, but it was, you could see it in his eyes how tired he was, and yet something keeps him going. I mean, we call him the Energizer Bunny because, you know, for the last 10 years he's been, you know, challenged by death, and yet he keeps going. But there was something different about it this past weekend. Even my stepmom says the same thing, and my brother who lives in the area says the same thing. And I had a chance to talk to him, actually. I had a chance to be alone with him a few times. And I asked him, I said, do you feel like this time it's more end time for you? You know, because, you know, I've talked about this with so many other people. I just had to go inside and be able to talk and bring it up in a way that was really from the heart. And to ask him, you know, it's like, do you feel like you're really near the end at this point? And he said, I don't know about that. He said, you know, it's like with all the other things, I take it a day at a time, and, you know, the pneumonia may pass and whatever. But he says, I am more tired of it this time.
Mm-hmm.
I am having, you know, it's like, and that's when he said, I never thought I'd be like this.
Mm-hmm.
He really feels like an old man. And I guess he always thought that he'd have all his vitality and energy and then maybe just have a heart attack and go. He never imaged himself being in this space. So my stepmom, who's a therapist also, and I have been talking, and my brothers and I have been talking, and after this weekend, my stepmom's been having a different level of conversation with him that is actually, you know, he signed a form to not resuscitate, you know, mm-hmm. use any heroic measures, you know, all that stuff. And a lot of this you talk about in your book. But that's what I'm saying. This is so timely. So I actually yesterday mailed them the second copy of your book. And I'm very grateful to have had it to send them.
Well,
and
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say that there was a gentleman that before he passed away, he had me actually videotape the first part of the Legacy of Love, which for the listeners, the Legacy of Love part of the Sacred Planner is your precious memories, your traditions, your values, your wisdom, important people in your life. It's a lot of questions that you answer about your life journey. And what this gentleman did, which maybe your family would like to do, Stuart, is they actually asked the questions to their father and videotaped all the answers. And then when he passed away, then they just had all these, you know, all of his life memories on video.
Mm-hmm.
And you may want to think about doing that.
Well, actually, that's something that I've brought up over, you know, because of all my work with HIV and AIDS and being, you know, at the bedside of so many friends as they died. It's something that I brought up to him a number of times. I even sent him a handheld tape recorder to at least talk,
mm-hmm.
you know, tell his childhood stories,
right.
and things that will die with him if he doesn't do this. And he always said, "Yeah, I'll do it," and he never did. And now I know to say, can we put a camera on you? That would be even more difficult because his pride is so strong, and I don't think he wants to be taped looking the way he does right now.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been pumping him for information about what it was like during World War II for him and what it was like growing up and the family dynamics and all that stuff. You know, for many years, so they're going to have to, those things are going to have to live on, but I just don't think he'll take a video camera in front
mm-hmm.
of him. It was hard enough for him to get me to take a photo of my brother.
This is Independent 1310 KXAM, Mesa, Phoenix.
Okay, again, I know where this is very unusual for us to be having this technical problem like we are tonight. I'm sorry we got cut off again. But this is Stuart Altshuler on Tell the Truth Faster on KXAM, 1310 AM. And tonight I have Sharon Lund, a friend, as my guest, who's also the author of a book called Sacred Living, Sacred Dying, A Guide to Embracing Life and Death. So, Sharon, before this other glitch tonight, and again to my listeners, I apologize, and I apologize to you, Sharon.
No problem.
We were talking about the importance of the suggestions you have in your book. So let's talk about the guide to embracing life and death. The thing that I said to open the show about my belief is you cannot really live fully if you do not face your own fear of death and dying,
mm-hmm.
I think is at the core of what your book is about. Because for someone to read this book and actually do some of the things or all of the things that you suggest in here, it really means taking a very close look at those fears, letting them come up and addressing them, and doing it not in isolation, but doing it in the nest of those loved ones around you. Tell me about the book, how it came to be, and then let's talk about what's in it.
Well, it actually came about because, as you know, and as you went through too, so many of our friends had died from AIDS complications that, as a minister back in the 80s, I helped some of my friends prepare their memorial and leave their legacy. And then when I had my near-death experience in 96, I realized I had been helping all these other people prepare their memorials or celebration of life. And I don't want to say funeral. I'm trying to change the belief about funerals and realize that it's our life journey. It's the memorial. It's a celebration of our life, where funeral sounds so dim and gloom. And when I realized after my near death that I hadn't done that for myself, I realized I had to. And in my meditation, I heard what I needed to do next in my journey or on my path was to change the reality of death for humanity. And I thought, what? And it was just like, yes, that's your next project, is to change the belief about death for humanity. And I said, how do I do that? And they said, you already know. And it was just immediately, it was all the things that I had been working with other people on their legacy, because everybody likes to share their story of their life. Everybody wants to be remembered. Everybody likes to tell stories about, you know, their childhood or growing up or the war stories or, you know, their love relationships. And when they start the process of the legacy, that gets them in a real positive, uplifting frame of mind. And then when they go into the memorial side of it, they're already embracing their life journey, and they take all of their experiences and create a memorial or a celebration of life that really honors their life story. So it's an uplifting book because it's not a doom and gloom. It's all positive things that represent and honors who you are and honors the people that are in your life.
And now let's talk about it and literally pull this apart.
Okay.
Legacy of Love is the first section.
Correct.
Talk about that.
The Legacy of Love, the whole book is called Sacred Planner. It's a planner that the first part, the Legacy of Love, might be something that you could give to a loved one for an anniversary gift, a birthday gift, anything special, because it's your life story. It's important people, your traditions, your beliefs, your values, your favorite things, favorite places, childhood memories, your proudest achievements, special moments. So it's all your journeys that you've done through life that you really, really cherish and want to remember and share with your succeeding generations. And people love to do that. And it says the book is all the questions are there, and you can decide what questions you want to answer and what questions you don't want to answer, and if you want to elaborate or if you want simple answers. And then the second part is called, of the Sacred Planner, would be your memorial or celebration of life. So say, for an example, if you were talking about all your golfing stories, this one gentleman that I helped, he was 68 years old, and he's healthy, he's still alive. And we did his life story, and it was all about golfing, and it was all about dancing. And I mean, this was his life. He just loved it. But he talked a little bit about his war and stuff. But for his celebration of life, he wanted it very joyful, and he decided that he wanted it at his country club. He belongs to a private club, and he wanted to have his celebration of life on the first tee of the golf club at sunset with all of his friends. And he sat down and he wrote down messages for his friends and loved ones, and one of his friends, George, who was going to leave his golf clubs for him. So he told him why he wanted to leave his golf clubs, and another person who's going to leave his golf cart for them. And he wrote special messages to them, and he wrote his final words. And then when he dies, he's going to have it on the first tee at sunset. And then he's going to have, he's already arranged to have golf balls engraved that says, no slice in the afterlife. And then after his memorial or celebration of life, he's going over to the restaurant at the country club. And he's going to have a fancy dinner and then and a dancing party with big band music because he likes big band music.
Uh-huh.
So this represents him. You know, it's just, it's his life, and it's honoring him and his friends, and it's a celebration. And it's, you know, people are still going to mourn, but it's about really reflecting on your life and embracing your life and leaving your life for your friends and loved ones.
Well, you know, you use the word celebration, and you know that that's how I embrace what we're doing here also, and, you know, call it a memorial, but most of the ones that I've helped officiate, you know, they've been celebration of life, and that's, you know, their programs and put together a beautiful photo on the cover of them, their favorite poems inside, you know, and you mentioned in this thing saying goodbye to you know, you saved those left behind so much work and at a time of their own grief, in terms of pick your own music, pick your own photos that you want, maybe even make a montage of your life before you go so that it's there and done. I remember when, you know, I dedicated the show a few weeks ago to Bo Yelsky, who passed away. I don't know if you know Pam.
Mm-hmm.
She's part of Women at Risk, and you know, her stepson Bo passed away, and he was infected with HIV when he was born through a surgery and transfusion. And here he is 23 years old when he passed away. And, you know, they had, you know, they knew this was coming, and yet for 5 or 6 days before we...
Get in the zone. AutoZone.
Your car takes a beating from the elements every day. Now, AutoZone can help you protect it. For a limited time, you can get an 8-ounce bottle of Armor All Protectant for just 99 cents. That's right, just 99 cents. Armor All, the undisputed leader in protection, helps renew and revitalize vinyl, rubber, and plastic. Get into AutoZone today for your bottle of Armor All Protectant for just 99 cents.
Get in the zone. AutoZone. KXAM.
Well, I'm not fully understanding what's going on with the board tonight. Wade, are we okay?
It's an interference. Okay. It's a thin veil between the worlds. We're working
maybe
on a thin veil.
Yeah, maybe there's some people on the other side just having some fun with us.
Yeah, they would like to be involved.
they certainly are. Maybe it's Bo. But anyway, it's like it's a time when you really want to be communing with one another and nurturing one another and remembering and not being caught up in all this busyness and doing and stuff. So, you know, the idea of you as an individual, myself as an individual, taking the time to actually make so many of these decisions and put it together, it will certainly end up with a lot of grateful people after you die, don't you think?
Absolutely. And the great thing is that every person that I've helped or that has taken the book and done it, I've never known anybody that's taken more than 3 hours to answer the questions. Mm-hmm. So it's like, is your life worth 3 hours to have that peace of mind for your friends and loved ones and to be able to really have you set the tone and you decide how you want to be remembered and how you want to honor your friends and loved ones? I mean, why put the burden on your loved ones when you die? And mm-hmm. nobody knows how or when they're going to die. You know, it doesn't matter if you're healthy today. You don't know if you're going to die tonight or tomorrow.
Right.
So the time is now.
So you talk about the saying goodbye. You talk about the memorial or the celebration of life. And, you know, many of us in, you know, throughout the last 20 years with HIV, I mean, we've been to some of the craziest, most hysterical celebrations that you can imagine. And... you know, we've been to some. In fact, I had a friend, Carl van der Kroon, who's Dutch, and his partner, Lars. Both of them were infected. Carl passed away a number of years ago in Holland. And they had, do you remember Suzanne Brodkin from the Hayride? She was one of
the
few women coming about the time when you were there. When she passed away, Lars and Carl had come to the States. They knew her.
Mm-hmm.
And they were blown away by, you know, the fact that this wasn't in a church and there weren't, like, dirges being sung and, you know, very typical Dutch type of mourning.
Uh-huh.
And they just couldn't believe what they were seeing. There was a buffet dinner and there were people getting up to the microphone and sharing funny stories. And there was a film montage of her and there were gifts everybody got. And they left there saying, that's the kind of memorial I want.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Carl passed away a number of years ago, they did the traditional thing in Holland, which is the dirge, you know, the funeral in a cathedral and all that stuff that the families are all used to and the friends are
mm-hmm.
all used to. But Carl left his instructions to invite me over to Holland and officiate a Suzanne type of memorial, a
Aww.
Celebration of life. And it was the most amazing thing, because most of them had never experienced it. In fact, Carl's parents were saying to Lars, we've already had a funeral. What's this about? Why are we doing this? And by the time they got done with this, they understood. You know, his father came up and didn't speak English, but through a translator, he had tears coming down his eyes saying, this was the most wonderful way of remembering my son.
Absolutely.
And thank you so much. It was such a difference between what they had been used to and now this new paradigm that they had in their minds was just very powerful.
Absolutely.
You know, so just because we're used to certain traditions doesn't mean we have to stick to them.
Right, right. And to be able to think outside of the box, you know, do you want it a different place and what kind of tone do you want? And, you know, you don't have to wear black. You can have everybody wear your favorite color or colorful things mm-hmm. or casual things. It's just, you know, your favorite music. Just go outside of the box. And mm-hmm. what's important to you? Where's your favorite place? What really brings you joy and happiness? One guy had it in a casino. You know, because he loved to gamble. So it's like, whatever.
Well, that's right.
Yep.
Decisions you must make, chapter 3. Now, these are things that most of us will avoid talking about, I mean, if you think about it, my dad just now signed the, you know, the decision about resuscitation,
mm-hmm.
you know, and here he... You know, they couldn't find the one they signed years ago, so they had to do it again. But there are decisions we all have to make, and we all know that, especially like in the gay community, where even when somebody's really sick, they still don't want to talk about it because they're afraid if they talk about it, they're going to die. Not just in the gay community, but that's kind of a thing a lot of people are stuck on. I don't want to deal with talking about death because... It'll bring it on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times the paperwork, the legal stuff, is not in order, whether you're gay or straight. Very often in the gay community, if that's not done, family who've never had anything to do with their child for years because they're gay come in and they take everything because there's no legal means
right.
for the partner to actually have everything,
right.
you know, which is what the intention was. So if you don't make these decisions and if you don't take these steps, gay or straight, things end up in probate and it goes to people that you really don't want to have your estate very often.
Very true. You're talking about like the domestic partnership. And another thing
yeah.
is if a person wants to be, say, I want to be cremated and I don't have that down in writing or in my legal papers or something, and my family says, no, we're going to bury her. You know, you've got to have everything in writing. You have to have it legalized, you know, the way you want it to happen. Otherwise, anybody can come change, your next of kin can change it without even against your wishes are.
Mm-hmm. If it's not written.
Right.
Right. Like, my mother's prepaid all of her expenses already, and
mm-hmm.
she told us exactly where those papers are located in her bedroom dresser, and, you know, she sent each one of us a copy of all the stuff, you know, her will and everything, so there's no questions. But people can actually even prepay all their arrangements if they want to and save that from having to be done afterwards too, right?
Yes, that's called a pre-need, and you can do that through the mortuaries, correct. I mean, that's anything from... the casket, the urn, the flowers, if you want a hearse, everything can be prepaid. And that's, you know, a real blessing for the family that, you know, when you pass away or you make your transition, that they don't have the burden of, oh, my God, you know, do they want this kind? Do they want that kind? What kind of interior do they want in the casket? What kind of flowers would they want? So everything is already arranged. And when the transition actually takes place, there's more calmness. And yes, there's going to be grief, but there's going to be a lot more calmness because they don't mm-hmm. have to be stressed out on planning everything.
KXAM.
It starts with local irritation.
I'm just not comfortable with you anymore.
Then, a strange sinking sensation.
I'm not getting the support I need.
Signs of the chronic condition known as furniture fatigue. Fortunately, Rent-A-Center has the cure for the common couch, bedroom set, dinette, and more with cool new brand name furniture, electronics, appliances, and computers too. All with easy payment options, delivery and service included. Rent-A-Center. We make it easy to make it your own.
Service included while you rent in Arkansas. The advertisement is for a rental purchase transaction. No ownership option in Minnesota. Visit Rent-A-Center or rentacenter.com for details.
Okay, everybody. I've called this meeting because business is...
in the crapper.
In the crapper, right. So let's hear your thoughts.
How come we spend so much money advertising in the newspaper?
Because the newspaper said they reached 600,000 people.
So what? Reach isn't what makes advertising work. Reach is like trying to get your kids to clean their rooms by telling them once a day. Did that ever work?
No, it didn't.
Hey, people forget. They need to be reminded. So you tell them over and over all day long. It's called frequency.
But we'd have to advertise on every station in town just to...
No, we wouldn't have to advertise. Where are you getting this stuff?
The guy at the newspaper told me.
Look, people listen to the radio everywhere, an average of 3 hours a day. So no matter where they are, we can talk to them. Think you can do that in the paper?
Well,
you can't. Because people average only about 25 minutes a day reading the paper. And you know where most of that's done?
In the,
Right.
Radio gets results.
This is Independent 1310 KXAM.
Well, this is Stuart Altrew again apologizing for this. We have never, Sharon, I really apologize, we've never had a night of technical problems like this.
Stuart, it's
ever.
Just the spirit realm. The veil. No problem.
Wait, are we okay?
I understand.
Okay. Okay, good.
I understand.
Actually, this happened at Bo's Celebration of Life, too, because they had worked all night long on doing this, photo montage and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they get there, and the machine in the auditorium wasn't working. So Bo apparently wanted to get right to the people sharing about his life.
Right.
And then someone actually ran out and bought a machine, brought it back in. We got it up, and... just in time, but it's almost, I mean, we all just laughed about him doing all that. But the question before we got cut off this last time had to do with ecologically responsible choice about burial.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that option.
Well, there's actually about 5 sites in the United States, and there's some in Europe and New Zealand, but the first one is down in Ramsey Creek in South Carolina. And what it is it's environmental friendly environment of acreage. Some of them have forest on them. And the people that are buried or cremated, it has to be a natural burial, so there's no embalming. And your friends and loved ones can actually build a casket if you're going to be buried like that, or you can be buried in a shroud. And then there won't be like a marker. They might plant a tree. They might put a stone with your name on it. But it's an environment where people can actually have a recreation. It's like a recreation environment. Some of them are, and some of them are like a forest environment. And I think that it's a real blessing to have that because you're not having all the chemicals, and it gives a person a choice. You know, do they want a natural burial, such as the ecological one? It's called a green burial, or a memorial preserve. Parks is what they're called. And your friends and loved ones can go there, and there's playgrounds, and there's, you know, trails going through the areas. There might be streams, there might be meadows. You can hear the birds singing. And it's just a real earthy, beautiful home, back-to-earth environment. And
which is basically ashes to ashes, dust to dust,
absolutely.
Because the body decomposes and the wooden casket decomposes and becomes part of the earth again, as opposed to the cemeteries that we've seen for so long that, you know, where the body
metal,
maybe
the
decomposes
steel.
It. Yeah, the steel and metal, you know, crypts and all this other stuff. And to me, it sounds like a great idea. I mean, my preference is cremation and to have my ashes scattered. But for the other option, I think it sounds like a great idea.
Yeah,
basically, it's getting back to the way it always was before we had all of this high technology.
Right. And you can actually, you don't even have to have a wooden one. You can have a cardboard container to be buried in. And there's one up in Northern California in Fernwood. You know, it's called the Fernwood one. So they're in different areas in the United States, but it's really a, it's supposed to be incredibly beautiful environments.
Mm-hmm. So what else do you want to make sure we talk about in terms of the book, choices people need to make, or what's been the impact of this book so far? I know it's only been out on the market for a little while, but what kind of feedback have you been getting?
I think that everybody that has gone, well, the people that I've talked to, every person that has done the process of their sacred planner, it has shifted their attitude about life and death. They have embraced it. But some people, like one lady, Susan, she was in a high-paying job, and she was just working around the clock but making a lot of money. And she realized after, and she was 43 years old, and she realized after she did her sacred planner that that's not what she wanted to do. So she started reprioritizing her life, and now she's working down in Mexico and going into Mexico and working with the orphans. There was another couple, Don and Dee, and they were in their 70s, and they're very, very healthy. And they've been married for 52 years. And this, for some people, this may sound real cruel, but it's not if you really get the gist of this. They'd been married for 52 years, not happy, and when they did the sacred planner, they realized that they were not living their truth, and they ended up getting a divorce, and he moved to Texas, and she went to Unity Village to do spirituality and do her service there. So I think it's forcing you to really embrace your life, to reprioritize your life, to speak your truth, to honor who you are, honor your friends and loved ones, and to live life with passion and to let go of that which no longer serves you. It's like, if I had a year to live, would I live my life differently? Answer the question. If you would, why are you waiting? Because nobody knows how long they're going to live. So it's been very, very impactful for people, young, old, healthy, and those that are ill, and for their loved ones.
Well, basically, as a therapist, one of the beautiful things about this book is that it really puts you in your process, and it's a really good healing thing. Just like you said, those people that did the process, did the planner, actually started realizing that they wanted their life to go in different ways, and that's what a lot of people go into therapy for. So it really is an incredible therapeutic tool to do, to really reassess who you are in the world and who you want to be and what you've achieved so far, and to be able to really acknowledge yourself and decide whether, you know, how you want to be remembered when you do go, and that may be 30, 40, 50 years from now.
Right.
You know, but it sounds to me like this book can be life-changing as opposed to just helping people with their death.
Absolutely. And the first part, as I said, Stuart, the legacy of love is a gift that you could give to a loved one for their birthday or anniversary or something special. You don't have to wait until, you know, you're dying or after your death or something, because that is your life story. And as you get older, you can, you know, change it as new people come in and new events, you know, come into your life and stuff like that. But to begin to do your legacy of love and share it whenever you want with whoever you want.
Mm-hmm.
But I think
Go ahead.
I think it's a very easy guide, and it's an uplifting one. It's not a doom and gloom, because
right,
I think everything in it is very, very positive and very, very uplifting.
Now, if people want to get a copy of this, the most direct way they can get it is by going to your website, which is sharonlund.com. That's www.sharon, as in Sharon, L-U-N-D, sharonlund.com, and they can actually order the book directly from your website, correct?
They can, and if they'd like it autographed to them or somebody else in the message thing, mention who they want to autograph to, and I'll actually put a special message to the person that they want to autograph to. And the day that I get the order, it costs $19.95, and the day I get the order, it'll be shipped out the next day.
Excellent. Sharon, I really want to thank you for that. We finally got to have talk on the air with each other. You know I love you so much, and I'm really grateful for who you are and for this book. And I want to thank my listeners for their patience and our technical roller coaster here tonight. And thank Wade for keeping us on track, my engineer. This is Stuart Altshuler on KXAM, 1310 AM in the Phoenix area. This is Tell the Truth Faster. We'll be back next Friday night with another show, and have a great weekend, everyone.
God bless you.
Thanks, Sharon.
Thank you.
That I heard of once.